This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Friday today. I just forgot the recorder yesterday, so I didn't have it at work. So I went ahead and did my costume stuff and yada, yada, yada today, and that was all fun. Finally getting around to recording the podcast. So, and actually, I was well on my way. In fact, I was home before I forgot that I was supposed to record the podcast today because I was off the schedule. So that's okay. I'm just in my car. I'm just going to drive around a little bit and I'll eventually get back home and it will be great. Everything is good. I'm officially on vacation. Whoop, whoop. So that's always fun. We're going to be heading out tomorrow, which is good because that gave me my two costume days. And so it was fun. It was fun. It was fun. This week is National Comic Book Day. So that's my Flash costume, but it's also with a t-shirt of a sloth in a Flash costume. So it's very cute. And I have my little spiel I do with it. It's very cute. People enjoy it. I get good reactions from everybody in this because, you know, it's a superhero costume. So I guess tomorrow, Barbie had asked me, my friend who dresses up in costumes and comes on Saturdays, she had asked me what this weekend was. And I said, well, it's National Comic Book Day. I said, I have a Flash costume. So she wrote back and she's got all kinds of costumes. She said, so will Batgirl work? I said, sure, Batgirl will work. That's a comic book. I'll see you then. So I think she's coming as Batgirl tomorrow. So that's been fun. So we'll take some pictures and I'll put them up on Facebook. So costumes are good. I have making the transition from the Wear It Pink costume that I did last year, where I put 1,800 pink breast cancer bows on a dress to show everybody that I cared more than anyone else. So, because I would tell people, you know, the number of bows you're wearing, that shows how much you care. And I said, I wanted to win. So, yeah. But that was a little too much for my wife. So she gets first right of refusal. So this year, you know, we were talking about it. She was like, yeah, she said, I'm a little concerned about what people think about that because of the whole drag queen thing. I said, that's fine, sweetie. I said, that doesn't matter to me. So I needed a replacement for that. And I had a peppermint candy cane, pink and white costume, that's a takeoff on a costume that was worn by a couple of young ladies in the live version of The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And so I have that costume. And I just need a few more neck ruffles and wrist ruffles and things. So I'm going to take that along on vacation and work on those while I'm on vacation with Nett, because there's always time when there's extra time to do things. And they're made out of a pink fake polyester, fake satin that's made out of polyester that is so hairy. I mean, you cut it and it just starts getting really hairy. And so because of that, it's actually going to be better if I'm doing that in a hotel room, because I promised Ned that I would never use that fabric upstairs again because it was everywhere. Although there won't be that much to this, and so, well, it won't be too bad because it's just a neck ruffle and two wrist ruffles and ankle ruffles, and that goes together fast. So might even be like one evening's worth of work, you know, three hours or so. But I just need that little augmentation to kind of polish it off and finish it off a little bit, and so be working on that. Still working on the Lion King mask. I'm working slowly. I'm working intentionally slowly. because I want to be very methodical about thinking about all the things I'm doing there and how it's going to fit to work it out. But I remain cautiously optimistic. I can't even say I'm cautiously optimistic now. I do believe I can make work what I have, that it will be something that will be functional. So that's good. The cape is still going to need some work, but I think I'm okay. I think I can get all the ruffles and stuff done while we're on vacation. That'll be fine. And then once we get back from vacation, it'll be the 1st of October, and I'm planning on wearing this the first week of November. So that gives me 4 weeks, and I think I'm on track. I think I'm on track. Still puttering along on book 20, and that's going fine. Setting them up. I know the long-term goals I need to get to before the end of the book, but I don't know how extensive the current subplots are. So I know I'm in subplots, and I know where they are, but I don't know if they extend for the entire book or there's another half something in there. It's gonna be interesting. We'll see how that works out. This is book 20, which means it's the halfway point for the third set of books. So I do have something fairly dramatic that happens at the end of this. And then obviously after this, I have 4 more books to go. And in those 4 books, we're doing the big ramp up. You know, it's on the last run. I mean, it is the final run now for the big ending, and ta-da, you know. So I know mostly where the last half of book 24 is supposed to go. I know where we end up, I think, in book 22. I have a couple of storylines I have to wrap up. But it feels like I'm in a good place, that's been pretty incredible for, you know, working on a 24 book series. It feels like I'm in a pretty good place. And here in 2 years and 9 months or so, I will have supposedly finished this off. So there you go. So this week, I had kind of revisited a topic that I obviously have talked about before. I came across really 2 PragerU videos that I thought both had extremely good information in them, but one of them, the first one, really ran along the lines of a discussion point that I make when I'm preaching to the choir about this stuff. But I make it with a caveat, and I couldn't remember for sure whether or not I had mentioned this on the podcast. So I thought, well, if I haven't, I've just got to get it down for posterity. I've mentioned it to multiple friends, and we've talked about the issue. But I don't think I've done it on the podcast, so here we go. Anyways, the first PragerU video was done by an evolutionary biologist, and he was talking about male and female. And what he was saying is exactly right. So he was recounting how Ketanji Jackson, in her Supreme Court interview, famously demurred when asked what a woman is, saying, "I'm not a biologist, and so, you know, I'm not a biologist, and so I can't really answer that." And this guy says, well, I am a biologist, so here's the answer. So, and he goes through all the absolutely factual things. I mean, it is, what he's saying is absolutely factual. I have different ways of saying it, but it's absolutely factual. So he's saying that, he said the question, to rephrase what she was saying, the question is here, is when it comes to sex categories in humans, are they real, immutable, and binary, or are they merely social constructs? And he says, from a biological standpoint, there are two sexes, not three, two. And it depends on what type of gamete you produce. So we've talked about this before. If you produce a sperm, you're a male. If you produce an ovum, you're a female. Done. And he, in this talk, goes through to talk about intersex people. But you know, at the end of it, you know, he comes down to the fact that I really should be home because I'm going to have to read a lot of this stuff. I really should be home before I do this. But he talks about all the normal stuff that I talk about, where I talk about, you know, in any gathering you are, there is no one in that group who is not the result of a sperm and an egg coming together, period. That's how human life reproduces, sperm and egg, done. And there is nobody who makes both sperm and egg, done. Intersex people who have organs that seem similar, they're sterile. So either you have someone who makes a sperm, or could have made a sperm, or should have made a sperm, or used to make sperm, or you have someone who makes an egg, could have made an egg, used to make an egg, or will make an egg. Done and done. It's perfectly binary. And he's making this argument from a biological standpoint. It's not necessarily a conservative argument, but this is the argument that conservatives make. And it is correct. It is correct. And one of the ways that I've been thinking about it recently is that when we're talking about male and female, let's see where we are. Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. When we're talking about male and female, we are really, those terms have always in the past been functional terms. This is what I've been talking to my buddies about. They've been functional terms. It's like saying hammer or screwdriver. When we say hammer or screwdriver, we are talking about a function. And I suppose you could have a screwdriver that would identify as a hammer, or a hammer that would identify as a screwdriver, and they would attempt to perform the roles of the others, but they're not going to be very good at it. Okay? Because there's all kinds of troubles if you are a screwdriver and you're trying to get a nail into a piece of board, and there's all kinds of troubles that result if you're a hammer and you're trying to put a screw into a board. You know, you might be able to make some progress, but it ain't going to be pretty. And in the same way, male and female are functional. Now, that's absolutely true. Biology is set. That's it. The only way you can say that a man can be a woman is if you re-identify the terms as something else. And obviously, we've moved those terms out of biology, first of all, into appearance. And then secondarily, with the advent of the internet, we've moved them into identity. Okay, so we talked about all that before. What's interesting to me about all this is the people who will make the most ardent arguments for it's all just biology, that male and female are biology, period, that's the definition for those terms. There's not more than one. sex, or there's not more than one definition of those terms, those same people, when it comes to appearance, will act like what they are saying is not true. So those same people will undermine the definitions that they are supplying for male and female. They will undermine them by their behavior. And they will give every indication that they do not believe that the only definition for male and female is biology. And I think this is one of the main drivers of transgenderism. So, if a guy who from other characteristics, sorry, I'm on a little country road because I'm driving around, for other secondary characteristics is obviously a guy, if that guy puts on a dress, he will get a negative reaction from the men who are saying that male and female is absolutely determined by biology. There's no reason for them to have that reaction if they truly believe that. Because if they truly believe that, it's just cloth. And it doesn't matter what the guy's wearing. But what happened initially is men, in their effort to make it easy for them to decide who they can use as a tool to help them reduce their sperm count, what they did is they established parameters of appearance for women. And by their response to different patterns of appearance, women learn to present themselves in such a way to gain social standing and to gain protection from the right man. And so what happened there is then the definition of male and female moved really into a definition of the even more ambiguous terms masculine and feminine. And then once those terms were ensconced in appearance and once the marketers got a hold of it and hyped it and in essence came up with definitions that the only thing that was important because of all the advertising they're doing is your appearance. That all these engines are just going to be driven off appearance and not actual biology. Once they got that done, then of course people who wanted to appear a different way and borrow the energy out of the base reproductive systems, of course those people were then going to lay claim to the labels, because we had already opened the door with our male gaze and with our reaction to people that were feminine, quote unquote, femininely dressed, even though we know they were not feminine. So that just absorbed portions of those definitions. Then as soon as you do that, transgenderism. You're into transgenderism at that point. Okay, so yada, yada, yada. So I say all that to say this biology video from PragerU is very, very good. It says exactly the right thing. All the facts are there. Good, 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 good. Except if we're going to make the argument that the definitions of male and female are strictly biological. If we're going to make that argument, which we should, because that is the concrete argument. It's absolutely concrete. And that argument is what will protect women in women's sports. That argument is what will protect women in women's spaces. Biological arguments will protect women. And they will keep women from being abused in female prisons because some male rapist says, oh yeah, now I've seen the errors of my way and I only acted out because I was always a man trapped in a woman's body and so therefore I need to be in a woman's prison, which has happened. And then the obvious has happened after that, which is that these guys are still rapists and they go and rape the women in the female prison, which is terrible. It's terrible. But if we're going to protect women in those circumstances, even though they've been convicted of a crime, The only way to do that is with biology. So you just have to say, look, you know, what type of gamete were you destined to make when you were born? And ta-da, what type of gamete do you make? It's biology. So that was the first video. The second video, I'm just going to read excerpts from, because it's by Abigail Schreier, and it actually has some extra information into it as to what's going on now. So she's talking about what's going on, why girls become boys. She said, if you know any middle or high school girls today, or if you are one yourself, it would not be surprising if you knew someone who identifies as transgender. The latest statistics indicate that 2% of American high school students now identify as transgender, and the overwhelming majority of them are teenage girls. Between 2016 and 2017 alone, the number of females seeking gender surgery in America quadrupled. But if you graduated from high school over a decade ago, it was unlikely that you knew anyone who was transgender, because according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the condition underlying it roughly affected 1 in 10,000 people, or 0.01% of the population, and almost none of those cases were teenage girls. So, back in the 2000s, you know, what you had was a situation where the percentages of transgender people were 0.01, and none of them, almost none of them, were teenage girls. And now you have 2%. That's a big factor. That's not times 20, that's times 200. No, it's not times 20, it's times 200. 200 times more. So she said, in fact, before 2012, there was no scientific or medical literature discussing adolescent girls who wanted to transition to the opposite sex. That doesn't mean that we don't know about transgender individuals. Gender dysphoria, the severe discomfort in one's biological sex, has been studied for nearly 100 years. It's almost always involved boys who began feeling it between the ages of 2 and 4 and were strong and persistent in their assertions to everyone around them, that they were really girls. But when a phenomenon that affects one half of the population, boys, suddenly begins affecting the other half, girls, and when its age of onset shifts from preschool to adolescence, something significant is happening. And so, you know, there's been research and parental reports, and the parental reports will say that none of the girls exhibit any kind of gender dysphoria in their early ages, and it all seems to arrive at puberty. Okay, well, there's probably a reason for that. So where it starts getting really devious and really corrosive is that on a lot of the social media influencers, they insist that, well, if you feel uncomfortable in your body, you're probably trans. Yeah, no, or you could just be a prepubescent girl or a pubescent girl who is going through this really radical change in her body. Why wouldn't you feel anxiety and stress? And then these influencers say, well, and if you start a course of testosterone, all your problems are going to go away. Abigail Schreier says, there is every reason to believe that these girls are experiencing real psychological pain. Rates of anxiety, depression, and instances of self-harms are at record levels for this generation. So yeah, quick fix. I should just go get testosterone, except a young woman's body is not designed to have testosterone at those levels. So she goes on to say, because here's what's not in dispute. Unnecessary medical gender transition causes irreversible damage. High risk of infertility, sexual dysfunction, and the creation of a permanent medical patient. Tragically, we've made it far too easy for kids to take this path long before they're ready psychologically or emotionally to make such a life-altering decision. Testosterone is easily obtained by today's teens. In Oregon, a 15-year-old can walk into a gender clinic. Yes, there are now gender clinics all over the country. And walk out the same day with a prescription for testosterone without her parents' permission. 16-year-old girls have been able to undergo double mastectomies, the removal of both breasts, without even a therapist's note. That's irreversible damage. So, predictably, hasty gender transition, remember we're talking about teenagers here, she goes on to say, is now the leading a lot of regret. So there's more and more testimonials. So how do you protect your daughter from being drawn into this dangerous and growing trend? According to Abigail Schreier, first, you limit their exposure to social media as much as you can. Several academic studies have already linked the alarming rates of anxiety and depression to young girls' punishing experience on social media, a place that often makes them feel sad, unattractive, and alone. Schools oppose the teaching of gender ideology in your kid's school. She says, in California, gender ideology education begins in kindergarten and proceeds through high school. The theme is that kids' gender ideology is totally independent of their physical sex, and that's something only they can know. Schools can and should insist that every child be treated respectfully without showing gender confusion, What Abigail is saying here is that schools should and can insist that every child be treated respectively without sowing gender confusion in an entire student population. Third and most importantly, remember that the teenager is just a teenager. You don't have to agree with every identity proclamation your daughter comes up with. Knowledge of her identity will develop over time. Until then, being the adult in the relationship is the most loving thing you can do. I agree. One thing that I might try is that try to have a true discussion about the distortions that are caused by the marketers. One thing, you know, that I think it's important for us to do is for us to have these discussions about what male and female actually mean, i.e. the biology of them, and then take the stance that anything outside that biology is just someone trying to sell you something. And I know that what it would, the uproar it would cause in our churches, but I think as long as we're trying to stay within these rigid bound lines of appearance and saying, no, boys have to look like this and girls have to look like this, and that's how we know you're not transgender, but there's no such thing as transgender, we go on to say, and you're all either just a boy or a girl, period. It doesn't matter what you wear. Okay, well, if it doesn't matter what you wear and you're just a boy and girl based on biology, why would we police what children are wearing and have any reaction to it? So I think there's a decoherence there between those things. And then on top of that, I think we do not point out enough what society is trying to do in terms of shifting the gender talk, not only just sowing confusion, but then also they shift the gender talk because there's money there. And I think we need to be very clear that when you're being turned around and convinced of other things on social media, that's where the money is. And this is all just marketing campaigns, and it's all just, oh, you need this product, and it's all just, well, now that you're transgender, you can be more transgender if you just wear this, you know, whatever, rainbow flag or something. So I think a lot of this is just outright manipulation that serves no other purpose than to make money, whether it's making money for the medical community, whether it's making money for the clothing industry or the makeup industry or the soft drink industry or whatever else they're going to use sex to sell with. And if we don't put a spotlight on that, then it holds a lot more power than it needs to. And so there was one other thing about that. What was it? What was it that I want to say? I don't know. Anyways, it's all just very, very, very fascinating. But I would really like to see us get ahead of this and just recognize that appearance is not biology, identity is not biology, and the only thing that's truly important is the biology of it. Such a fascinating time. It's just such a fascinating time. And honestly, I'm really happy I'm not trying to raise kids at this point. Oh, because I can't imagine how difficult that must be now to raise children in this toxic soup of gender ideology and critical race theory and all those things. But Jesus knows about all these things, and I'll just keep doing my little part, going to the Walmart, trying to show people it doesn't matter what I dress up in, I'm still me. We'll see. We'll see. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.